You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back on ESPN 97.5, 8 o'clock straight up here. We're going to join the Astros out in West Palm at the bottom of the hour. Until then, Brandon Johnson is with us in studio. Quite the story. Back in 2009 and 10, 2009-10 season, Brandon was involved in a point-shaving scandal at San Diego. And he paid the price, did prison time. And now has since you've done a lot of speaking, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
In training, you know, Sean Pendergast, who's on the other station, his brother was also involved in point shaving.
Yeah,
Sean
Pendergast. I
remember. But yeah. not when he was at Notre Dame. It was when he was at Northwest. He was living in Evanston or Chicago or whatever, and he got involved with the Northwestern football team.
Yeah, yeah. I heard about that.
Well, right. Speaking of
or
there,
basketball yeah. team, I think. Not football.
What I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I think it was basketball.
Basketball, whatever. But he did time just like you did.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of speaking engagements mm-hmm. as well. So how did it get started, Brandon? How do you trap a kid into this?
You know, it flows in so many different ways, man. Like for me, or other kids that's vulnerable. I was homeless in high school. I went to college. I was by myself, throughout college. And I think some of the thing that transpired, it made me vulnerable. It made me even, entertain the situation at that extent.
Before college. About how you became homeless and how you became more vulnerable to
man. So where I grew up with my mom's, man, we had a long, long journey, man. She struggled as a kid, and obviously I became a product of the environment, man. She was a real hustler. I come from a hustler's background, so I kind of was exposed to a lot of different things when I was growing up, man, which kind of trickled down to me in a sense. My mom's had a situation where the situation led us to go to our father. I met my father around the fourth grade. Me and my father had certain differences. Around the ninth grade, man, I had been exposed to other things. My dad was a blessing because he taught me morals and values. He was a guy that got up from 9 to 5 to go to work and things like that. So it was a good recipe from what I learned from my mom's and what I learned from my father. So around ninth grade, I decided that I really wanted to have a life different than my brothers. I had a few. I'm the youngest of five, and they basically set the example for me what not to do. And so from there, man, I told my dad, listen, I want to do something great with my life, man. He wanted me to work a job and things like that, but I wanted to do something amazing. So from there, man, I told my dad I'm leaving the house. I left the house at ninth grade. I hit the streets. I stayed with numerous of friends and things like that, which in a sense I kind of chose to be homeless. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, I didn't have a place to stay. I was staying at numerous of people's houses on couches and things like that. I remember my AAU coach picking me up from all kinds of places, you know, while these kids are kind of staying with their parents. So during that time, God blessed me with an opportunity to go to the University of San Diego. Through the whole journey of my struggle, I still end up finding a way to, you know, go to the next level. And once I get to University of San Diego,
where
man,
are you living, by the way? What city were you in?
I was in Houston. I was in Houston.
You were here.
I was in Missouri City area.
Okay.
I went to Willow Ridge High School. Shouts out to TJ Ford Ridge. And Dan Ewan and Ivan McFarlane, all those guys who kind of inspired me to stay, continue playing. When I had missed school for a few months, and God blessed me with one of my best friends, man. Grandma heard about my situation, and she took me in like I was her own. So with that being said, that kind of gave me a foundation to still stay in school. I was homeless, like I said. I went to college, and that kind of was obviously I went to a whole nother state. Like I tell people, it's different. Being homeless in the city, it was different. I knew I still had family. And when I went to San Diego, California, I wasn't educated to that extent about college. Mm-hmm. College was really never on my plate. I just knew I wanted to be successful.
Right.
So I get to college and I'm homeless during that time. And it just kind of just so happened, man. Like life started taking its place, took its course. And I was trying to figure it out in my freshman year. You know, so I remember sitting in the dorms and their parents was dropping their kids off the first day of school. And I remember having two bags of clothes when I went to college, and I put the clothes in the drawers, and the other kids with their parents in the room, they bringing trailers and, you know, books and computers and all that. And that's when I realized how alone I was. This journey was about to be. And like I said, that kind of led to me being vulnerable to a certain extent. For me, Me and the coach had a great relationship, a bond. I think down the line, once we get to that part, you can see how he might have used it to his advantage for our relationship. But during that time, my freshman year, like I say, me being poor, me not knowing, me coming from where I come from, I was accessible to the situation in a sense. For as if you know me, then you know. You know, you got to know my personality to know what's going on for us at the school.
Mm-hmm. And you were paid up to, excuse me, you were paid $1,000 for. Right. So how did it work?
So when they came at me, honestly, man, when they came at me, it was just more so, hey, vouch for me. When I what's crazy about this story, if you read online, it says that I point shave. But if you dig deeper, it's a knowledge. I had knowledge of a conspiracy. So I've never been convicted of a game. I had knowledge of a conspiracy and I had charges of bribery. But with that being said, they try to pinpoint games, which it's hard to do in this sport because good players have bad games, bad players have good games. But, you know, for my heart, when I was picked up by the FBI, I was honest with them. I gave them a confession for like an hour, but I didn't know the magnitude of this case. I didn't know who was all in my case. I remember seeing them at one point through my journey, but I never knew it was to this extent. The FBI honestly was working with looking at the mafia in 2007, and they kept tabs on them. And then they had an informant around 2009, 2010, working the case, and he heard about gambling. I was a year removed. I was with the Wizards when they picked me up. I came home to Houston to see my mom's, and around 6 a.m. that morning, my life was changed. The FBI was at my doorstep. I had came home, like I said, I came home to see my mom's. They was at the doorstep, and once I opened the door, like I said, my life changed.
So Thaddeus Brown was the only one that you were.
That's the only
that's
one.
That's the
I
assistant
knew.
Coach. Yeah, that's the only the, one. He the, came to you and said.
Yeah, well, it was more so, listen, vouch for me. When I found out through the transcript, I found out that he was in debt with the mafia. So that's why I said that relationship, that day, my freshman year, when he realized I was poor. You know, if you know the University of San Diego, it's a private institution, but it's really rich. And I think he saw that, and that day he kind of took hold of me in a sense of like, hey, I'm here for you. So on barbecues, holidays, and things like that, I'm at his house.
Well, let me ask you, Brandon, do you think that was – or do you even know where it was a legit real thing? It can be both. It can be where it's legit real. Do you think he had issues dating all the way back to by the time he met you, or did that just kind of develop?
I think that developed. My freshman, sophomore year, they was my coach. He was my coach.
That's not unusual to have, coach to have a relationship with a player.
Yeah,
like
no. We was close, and I think the culture thing side of it, like where I come from, we didn't have diversity to that extent. Right. So when I get to the University of San Diego, he was the only black coach on the staff. Mm-hmm. So obviously me and him kind of
clicked up.
Yeah, and like I say, going through my journey, man, I was there by myself. So he was my trainer. He practiced with us. He coached me. You know, he was the guy that they said, listen, whenever something happened, go talk to him. You know, so he was my motivator. He was like my big brother. So that relationship, we were so close, but it was never came to me established like, hey, go point shave a game.
Right.
Or anything like that. It was never like that. But once I started kind of learning this world, it's never comes at you like that.
Well, it says here in the story, at one point, Johnson was heard on electronic surveillance talking about how he wouldn't shoot at the end of a particular game because it would have cost him $1,000.
Right. So basically what I was saying is if you put it on a if you said something right now and they put it on a magnifying glass, and when I say you have to know my personality, I understood what was going on. Like when I was with the NBA, I understood, okay, you bet on games. But that's not illegal. What's illegal is when you involve me to that certain extent. So when he did what he did, I had no idea for the extent he was going. So if I sit here right now and tip you and you go back and bet on the game, I'm part of that situation now.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So like I said, if I'm talking to my brother, if I'm talking to anybody, if you're talking to one of your best friends and you're just talking noise and all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm a rob a bank. And that bank just happened to get robbed and that conversation is tapped. Your words are under a magnifying glass now. And that's what my words became. And I understood for me go to trial, I would have to basically show them my personality in that situation.
But did you miss free throws?
No.
I mean, did you not take a shot so you wouldn't score more points?
And I'm going to be honest with you. I've replayed so many scenarios in my head. And even when I got in that interrogation room, man, I gave them everything I knew. And they kept trying to push the issue for us. Did you point shave? Did you point shave? And I'm just like, man, listen, I would love to say that so we can get this over with. But I couldn't. I was going to trial, and they had me up to 3 years to prison. And I was just like, listen, I'm going to have to accept that. It was one thing I wasn't going to accept. And it was like, yo, I understand where you guys coming from. I played a huge part in this situation. I will take what I'm gonna get.
How did you play a huge part?
If you didn't share the
bribery, I was part of the bribery. So when I was with the NBA, they called me and they was just like, "Hey, can you have such and such vouch?" And so I called one of the kids at the school. I was like, "Listen, hey, all you gotta do is vouch for him, just like I did." So
vouch for him for what?
Just like so when they saw me, I was so close to him. Yeah. When they saw me,
You're talking about the coach, right?
When they saw me and the coach, they understood. Like, oh, we're close. You don't have to be confused. But he didn't have that same connection with the kid. So I was thinking it was on that level. Me still being young, I'm not thinking, like I said, the magnitude of the entire situation. What I'm saying, okay, all you gotta do is do what I did.
So he wanted to keep getting point shaving stuff going with other people.
He tried to
and
reach
you
out to a kid,
for the coach.
And I vouched for the coach. Right. And so now it becomes like, okay, we're all in a
conspiracy,
big
conspiracy. Right.
So yeah. What I went to prison on is knowledge of a conspiracy. I sat in that case 2.5 years and they never gave me a game. We went to a motion hearing and I'm sitting with the judge and my lawyer said, "Hey, do you know they haven't given us a game yet?"
When did you tell people about when you got arrested? What happened when you got out of San Diego? The journey, what happens after?
So when I got out of San Diego, I went to the Phoenix Suns.
Free and clear. You didn't feel like there was any trouble.
I was a year removed. Literally, I was a year removed from college. I went to the Phoenix Suns. Dan Marley suggested that I go try out with the Wizards. I played with the Wizards preseason for a little bit, and then I came home and see my moms. I had no idea. I'm a foot in the door with the NBA. I remember seeing so many NBA scouts. So I was on the my junior year, we beat UConn and all those guys. So I knew where I was going. I knew the NBA was close. So all those sacrifices, when I tell you my journey and everything that I went through, you got to understand, I couldn't have really thought about all this. You know, the risk and everything, the decision I was making. So from college all the way to the NBA until I get home to see my moms, and at 6 a.m., what I say changed my life, man, it took everything I had. I lost my agent, I lost my contract, and everything else that I had worked for and sacrificed for from a kid. So it was definitely devastating.
You were the all-time leader in points and assists when you
left? Yeah, all-time leader in assists, points, and steals.
Still are?
Yeah. And no, I'm actually number two. I'm actually number two in both, and number one in steals. But I'm just going to credit this. I'm going to say this. For the WCC, I'm the only player that ever led in scoring and assists.
In the same season?
No, for the WCC, the entire conference. That mean with Steve Nash and all those guys.
Oh, wow.
So I hold that I'm the first
person.
Well,
and so I guess that's why it would be difficult to make the case that you were point shaving.
Right, right.
Because you played well. Right. Now, sometimes you don't play all
Yeah,
that
but well. If you check every game that they try to push out, I led the scores. You know, no offense. I was just like, yo, you got to actually check my teammates because I was the leading scorer in every game. But, man, it was crazy deal where I just got caught up in making the wrong decision. I entertained certain things at that level where, like I said, I played my part. I felt like the time I was given was right. You know, at a certain extent, you know, you got to pay for your consequences.
That's right.
Yeah. And the decision I made changed my life forever, impacted me. But it was, like I say, it depends on how you look at life. For me, I'm real spiritual. So at the end of the day, during those 2 years, I wasn't the father I needed to be. God gave me, set me down, and I was able to be the father. My oldest son is 12, and I was able to be a father every day. The gap I had where I was not with my family, I was able to go hang out with my family and build that relationship again. And I was ready for prison because I understood, like, hey, this is life, and this is what you have to pay for when you make these decisions.
How tough was doing that time?
Oh man, it was tough from a standpoint. Obviously, prison is prison, but for me, I went in there. I was excited. I was ready to get on with my life. I was in Yazoo, Mississippi.
Okay,
and what's crazy? I was Jay-Z and Yo Gotti. I don't know if you know those rappers, but they're right now pushing a protest against the prisons. In Mississippi.
Oh yeah, Mississippi. Yeah, that's
so
right.
I was in Yazoo, which was from that standpoint, it was horrible, you know. But I went in there excited because I was ready to get on with my life. I hadn't rested in so long, and I tell people every king got to come off his throne. I had amazing life through college, but
we're gonna break it right here. When we come back, we're gonna get to your time in prison, what took place there. Everyone's always interested in that kind of stuff.
And then
afterwards, what took place afterwards.
Got you.
That'll happen next right here on ESPN 97.5. But right now, it's GiveMeTheVIN.com. GiveMeTheVIN.com. What do you want for your car? You want less money? No, you want to get as much as you possibly can. Why would you take less money for your vehicle? You're selling it. It's, well, I want to do the dealership right. What? Why? That big dealership is making all kinds of money. Or sell it to someone that for under the value you can possibly get it. Know what that value is by going to givemethevin.com. If you're going to sell your car, go there. Because John Clay Wolf says this, if I can't beat CarMax's offer, I will send you $100. So you are guaranteed to get the most for your vehicle. If CarMax gives more, great. Then you get $100 plus the money you get from CarMax. But if John Clay Wolf gives more, guess what? CarMax was trying to get it from you for less. And don't let that happen. Or the dealership or wherever. Just get the most for your car at GiveMeTheVIN.com. At least go in armed knowing what you can get. GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, back here on ESPN 97.5. We got Brandon Johnson in studio with us here. And it was a little bit. Jackie says, I'm still not sure what you are admitted to doing. Mm-hmm. And what you are admitting to doing is not point shaming. What you admitted to doing was knowing that it was going on.
Yeah.
And just knowing about the conspiracy.
Yeah, and bribery. Like I said, I reached out to one of the kids.
One of the kids.
I was part of bribery, and I was part of knowledge of conspiracy. Basically, they did not have a game. So it was just like, hey, it was word of mouth. And I knew that, and... Yeah,
but if you're just joining us now, we're in 10 minutes. We're going to be joining the Astros press conference live. We're the only station that can't have it. We're an ESPN affiliate, and ESPN's going to carry it live, so you can hear it right here. The only place in the city that you'll be able to hear it live. So Brandon Johnson, for those of you just joining us, was at San Diego. He was accused of point shaving, ended up bribery, and knowledge of a conspiracy. You did 6 months in prison. Now, you feel like it was a blessing?
Yeah, definitely. For me, me going to prison, like I say, I had went so long, man, to try to change my life. I graduated college. I accomplished so many things, but like I said, I did make that decision, which landed me in prison. Prison was an experience where I got rest. I was able to recover from everything. I repaired my mind, man. It's so many things that went on, transpired through before I even was 27, you know. So I was tired, I was fatigued, I was ready to lay down, man, and just, like I said, gather my thoughts and rebuild myself. And when I was ready, man, they released me November 22nd. I was sentenced March 1st. I was a self-surrender May 31st. They released me November 22nd. I did 6 months and a year of probation. And my life restarted. ESPN, I did ESPN the magazine. They actually picked me up from prison. I played basketball in prison. Kind of kept me sane a little bit. But it was...
Did you go all out? Like,
man, I
went all
out.
You know, you always hear about stories like, you can't disrespect this guy. Nah. Like, did you ever... I don't want to cross this guy up. I could, but
it was crazy because when I was there after so many games, they was just like, he came in shape. Which when they say you came in shape, they know you probably wasn't selling dope or anything. Because you know, I was in the kind of shape like, yo, he got to be doing something different. And so I'm walking in the yard, man. I was in solitary when I first got there. They didn't have bed space. I was supposed to go to a camp. They put me in a load. They didn't have bed space, so I was in solitary. Solitary is crazy. It's definitely a moment where you just like. You have to be so in tune mentally. And like
all
I said,
all you do is what? Think? Is it, man, really? What goes through your mind in solitary?
What went through
confinement?
My mind is movies. Okay, they do push-ups. You know, I walked in prison with a movie in my head. Like, that's the only thing I had to go from.
Which,
you know,
movie?
He Got Game when his dad, you know, right. Things like that. I'm walking around with my shoulders back because I'm thinking like, oh, I'm gonna have to prove myself and things like
right,
that.
Right,
like,
right.
It's a jungle in there. But you got certain places that people are doing their time and doing their time without that issue. So, for me, man, I felt like, you know, more of God had put me in a situation where my talent in that world, basketball is like, you know, I'm LeBron. I was LeBron in there. You don't want to hurt LeBron. You know, like, you looking for. I had people standing. I had like 1,500 people standing around that court after a few games, really paying attention and watching. So, like I say, prison for me, I was rebuilding myself. I was waking up 6:30 every morning, still got the vision in my head. The judge said I wouldn't play no more. But in my heart, I'm saying, listen, when I get out, I'm prepping for my opportunity. And, Man, prison was an experience, man. I believe any kid that's a good kid that made a bad decision, not bad kids that's just looking to be bad. I think any kid that's good and make a bad decision, I think the judge should give him 6 months.
But here's the problem. One of the things that you run into, and I know this from so many documentaries and watching, and you do have places where it's tough once you get in to keep from getting yourself in more trouble in some cases.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case for you.
Man, no, I honestly, when I was in solitary, man, I had lawyers and people from ESPN calling in, and because they realized, like, hey, he's about to do the rest of his time in solitary. I'm not in trouble or anything. So they was calling.
You did a full 6 months.
Yeah, I had no idea they was calling in for me. So when I got to the front, the warden was like, y'all better thank Brandon, because it was like 40 other people back there that was in solitary that wasn't going to get out. Because there was no bed space at the camp. So they were still going to do all solitary time. So when the people was calling in and lawyers was calling in for me, they let us all out. So when I'm walking the yard, all the kids that got out was like, hey, we appreciate it. Because they actually might need to be in there. But for me, I'm like, hey, you know, it's insane. Because if I came in here right now and took you guys, and the FBI came in and took you guys and just put you in prison, you'd be in shock. And that's what my life was. I had went so far away from anything negative. San Diego is amazing. I'm with the NBA. I graduated, caught all these things, and all of a sudden, boom.
We wish we had more time. We want you to take us. What happened when you got out?
Oh, I got out, man. I ended up going to Lebanon, my first deal overseas, man. I ended up playing again. God blessed me with the opportunity to get back to the game, man. I've been playing for the last 6 years. But this past year, man, God also opened the lane up for me to public speak. I'm basically sharing my story to universities now. I went to Oklahoma, Louisville. I spoke at the NCAA in Indianapolis, places like that where they want to hear my testimony. And it's different from a PowerPoint when you're telling your story and you're giving an educated experience more so than just moving a slide. And I spoke with the FBI in Louisville. I saw the impact that it had on the kids and the difference it made on the kids. But as of now, man, I've been doing a lot of public speaking. Now I'm putting a curricular program in the educational system. My story has turned into more of a motivational, inspirational kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Never quit story. A lot of kids want to hear how you conquer that adversity. I come from a homeless. I end up graduating. It's so many things that that jammed up in that pot of that recipe that's made me who I am today.
We have not had a chance to give your entire story. How can people reach out and hear, see, or follow your
man
story?
Listen, my company Bold Management, Brandon Bowles Journey, www.brandonsboldjourney.com. Then you can check me out at I Am Brandon Johnson, my Instagram, also B Johnson, man, my Twitter account, man. If you guys want to follow my journey, please do, man. I promise you, there's plenty of amazing content on there that's going to inspire
neat,
you
neat stuff. Well, what you are an inspiration for,
and
you
know, so much more to get into in, like I said, there's so much more we would have done even more other than the fact that we got the press conference that popped up the same day we were having you
coming your way. We got to go. We got to take a break. Brandon, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it. Yeah, we will hear from you again. In the meantime,
time for me to tell you about my friends over at Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC. Craig DeSurf wants you to head out to Angleton. And when you do, he's got 0% finance deals on 2020 Chevy Silverados, for example. No, GMC Sierra crew cabs. He's got crew cab, double cabs, the 1500s. He's got 0% financing for select models for up to 72 months. Make sure that you go to LanceZCars.com so you can check it out for yourself. LanceZCars has the entire inventory in stock, and you can see which vehicle suits you best. And that is a company that is going to make sure that you get not only the very best price, not only the biggest selection, but the best trade-in value. Nobody can touch their trade-in value, and nobody goes to the links that Gulf Coast Chevrolet Buick GMC go to make sure you're taken care of. LanceZCars.com.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet in Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 829 ESPN 97.5. We'll send it over. Del, can you hear the network feed to know when to go over? Yeah. Okay, so let us know.
So Del will let us know when it's time. Yeah. Well, that's a hell of a story, isn't it? And we only got a small snippet.
So I just tweeted out the only place that you can hear the Astros apology press conference is live right here. It's a lie, but I don't care. I tweeted it out anyway. But this is where you should be listening to it.
Probably.
There's another place.
But there's another place that can't do anything. I don't, and they have to just keep talking about backup linebackers.
Yeah. No, they can't. That's all they're going to do. Well, and what about backup guards?
We believe that everything the president, general manager, and head coach does
Nick
is great.
Casario
our division championship headed in the right direction.
Nick Casario, bum.
Oh, we can see the press conference right there.
Oh, right there. Yeah, I can't.
This is great. National television. This is all so very fine.
Doesn't get any better.
Not national television, but ESPN's going to cut in on their TV programming.
Yeah.
This is also very fantastic.
It's totally sweet.
Just all this.
No. And nobody's going to break down every sentence and every facial expression and everything else.
That's amazing.
It's just a load of crap. I mean, they are like vultures. They are surrounding the Astros. It's the Champions and Cheaters, the spring training site for the Champions and the Cheaters.
Is right. He said, this press conference reminds me of the steroid hearings we were when 1560 chat. When he said, I was on the 1560 chat room for that, and you played There Will Be Blood on your computer and put it up to the chat. Oh, that's right. I had There Will Be Blood, the movie, and I let people watch it. Oh, here we go. Here's Jim Cramer.
Here we go. Go. What? It's not.
They haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, he's there at the podium.
He hasn't said a word yet.
He's at the podium.
I don't have audio from that.
Hold on. Wait. There's nothing you can do until...
Okay, go.
Here we go.
Welcome to the start of spring training. I'm going to go over a few remarks, and then I'm going to turn it over to our players, followed by some comments from Dusty Baker here. Last month, when MLB announced the penalties to the Houston Astros, I issued an apology to our fans and the city of Houston. I want to say again how sorry our team is for what happened. I want to also repeat that this will never happen again on my watch. MLB clearly stated that people leading the baseball operation and field operation should be held accountable for these actions, and I agree with them. Our GM and manager were not only suspended for a year, we went above and beyond and fired them. MLB also acknowledged that the players should not be punished for the failure of our leadership. The leaders enabled, condoned, and did not stop those actions that happened. I also agree that our players should not be punished for these actions. These are a great group of guys who did not receive proper guidance from their leaders. We cannot change the actions of the past, but we are fully committed and moving forward in the right way. I believe a big step in moving forward is with our new GM and manager. We have two men of great character leading our baseball operation. James Click and Dusty Baker will help our players and our entire organization deliver a competitive team on the field and continue our commitment to Houston and make them proud off the field. I'm very optimistic about this season. We have a great ball club, and I look forward to talking to you all about the future. Finally, I would like to personally thank all of our fans, sponsors, and the community of Houston for their loyalty and support. I will now turn it over to Alex, who will speak on behalf of the players.
Okay, Alex is going to give a brief statement, followed by Jose Altuve.
Thank you, Jim. I have some brief remarks that I'd like to share with y'all. I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Alex. I also will be brief. We had a great team meeting last night, and I want to say that the whole Astros organization and the team feel bad about what happened in 2017. We especially feel remorse for the impact in our fans and the game of baseball, and our team is determined to move forward, to play with intensity, and to bring back a championship to Houston in 2020. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jose. Thank you, Alex. You guys can head back to the clubhouse. As I said, at 10 o'clock, clubhouse will open to media. You have access to the players. At this time, we'll open up to questions for Jim and Dusty Baker. Oh, excuse me. At this time, Dusty Baker has some remarks to make as well.
Thank you. You've heard from Jim, and you've heard from Alex, and from Jose Altuve, and I just want to say, at that meeting last night, the players showed tremendous remorse and sorrow, and embarrassment for their families, their organization, the city of Houston, and for baseball, and. I'm just want to ask for, the world, the baseball world, to forgive them for the mistakes that they've made. And we're looking forward to an excellent season this year in a great town. That's a great baseball town. And we want to bring a championship back. It was kind of a weird situation for me. To have to come into this situation, but I feel that Jim Crane and the Astros felt that I was the man to try to take us forward. I've been through a lot of different changes in my life, and I think a lot of these things prepared me for what we are to encounter this year. I'm excited to be with these guys. They're a great bunch of guys. Like I said, they're together. They love each other. But again, they show tremendous remorse. And I was proud of them on how they acted last night and what we talked about. So I'm closing with that. Am I supposed to take questions now? Or I can just sit down?
Scola, can we go on ESPN Radio? We've got you live right now in Houston, with the Houston Astros as they delivered their first press conference speaking about the sign-stealing scandal. We're going to keep you here and see what happens from these questions.
Open it up to questions now. Please raise your hand, and Caroline and Chris will come over. Questions? Okay, right here.
Morning. If current reporting by Sports Illustrated and others is correct, and there were, may have been a half a dozen other teams engaged in similar practices, does that mean there are another half a dozen managers and GMs who need to go, or are you willing to take the brunt of this and try to move forward and let those other guys get off?
Listen, we're staying focused on the Astros. It's not my job to deal with those other teams. I'm sure the commissioner will handle that appropriately. We're glad to... if there's a silver lining here, we're glad to get this behind us and get spring training started, and we feel very fortunate to have Dusty and James Click here.
Okay, Tyler.
Jim, you mentioned right off the top there that the players, I think, did not receive proper guidance from their leaders, but the league's official report says it was a player-driven scheme. Do you think it was not driven by the players, or why do you absolve the players, it sounds like, of blame for this?
Well, the commissioner's report was very thorough, and they did a lot of work on it. Where the commissioner came down, which I agree with him, is that it could have been stopped, and it wasn't stopped, and people had knowledge of it based upon the report. So we hold those two guys accountable for what happened and not stopping that action.
Okay, another question? Raise your hand. Okay.
Mr. Crane, what do you have to say to the Yankees and teams that you beat in 17?
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Another question. Chandler right here.
Jim, are you confident your team didn't use any wearable devices or buzzers during the 2019 season?
The commissioner addressed that in the report, and I'm confident it's accurate. I've discussed it with the players, and they've assured me that nothing like that ever happened. There's no substance to that whatsoever. And I believe AJ made a comment last night and cleared that up. I truly believe there was no buzzers ever, and I don't even know where that came from. So.
Okay, Mark. Okay, that's yours. Okay, right here up front. Okay, we'll go to Jeff first, and then over here.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
Okay, right over here.
Jim, after the Wall Street Journal article came out last week, it sort of painted another picture of the sign stealing scandal also being driven through the front office. Have you guys had conversations with the front office staffers who are still here who may have been a part of the scheme initially? And how can fans be ensured that everything is above board considering some of the same folks are still around?
Well, again, you know, the leader of that department has been fired. I've had some time to review the department. You know, there will be some changes in there. As the commissioner said, he wasn't going to count the lower level people, hold them accountable along with the players. I agree with that. But we are reviewing the baseball operations. James Click and I will continue to work on that and put a structure together that we feel comfortable that this won't happen again in the future.
Okay, over here.
Kerry Sanders with NBC News. Was this cheating, and how does this reflect the feelings of the nation right now, where we see a corseting of rhetoric in this country, where people seem to want to win at any cost, even if it includes cheating?
Well, listen, we don't endorse the actions that took place. We've apologized. You know, it's been tough on the team and tough on the city and tough on the nation. I don't disagree with that. But the only thing we can do is sit here and say we're sorry. We're going to move forward in a positive way. And you can count us to be a positive force in delivering that message.
May I ask, is it cheating?
Excuse me?
Do you use the word cheating? Was this cheating?
We broke the rules. And you can phrase that any way you want.
Okay, over here.
Hi, do you believe that the Astros should still retain the 2017 pennant, you know, despite the way that the team cheated?
Listen, the commissioner made it clear that we weren't going to go backwards. The championship would stay intact, and I agree with him.
Okay, Brian.
Jim, when it comes to the rule-breaking, when do you believe that it stopped?
It's a little unclear, I think, from the report. You know, from what I could tell, and I didn't do the investigation, that, you know, 17 and a little bit in 18, but clearly it stopped early on, and, you know, there's different opinions on that. And then, you know, early 18 it was finished, and there was nothing in 19.
Okay, Marley.
Thank you, Jim. To Jim and to Dusty. Jim, you know Carlos Beltran very well. You helped Puerto Rico after the hurricane and everything else. In the current reports, it says that he was the ringleader of all this and that the players followed his and didn't dare to question what he was saying. The Carlos Beltran that you know, do you believe that to be true? And I would to Dusty, too, because Dusty knows Carlos Beltran well.
I'll let Dusty go first if you want that.
Well, yeah, I'll go first. It was a little disheartening, you know, to hear some of the things that I was hearing about Carlos. I've known him from the other side of the field. I've known him as, you know, as a fine man, you know, a Christian man at the same time. But, you know, I don't know if what was written is true or not. But, you know, we're all capable of wrongdoing at some point in time. And I just felt, like I said, I just felt badly, you know, for Carlos and for the Astros and for baseball. I just hope that we can, you know, put this behind us and that, you know, we can go ahead and just play baseball and realize that we've made mistakes and the guys have said they're sorry for it and hopefully people will forgive us.
Okay, Hannah. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, Carlos is a great player and he had a great career and, you know, hopefully he'll get past this. I feel sorry for him. You know, I think he's made a statement in that regard. And, you know, the report's a report. I didn't do the investigation, but he was named in the investigation. So you have to feel that's accurate. So, you know, again, Carlos had a great career. I feel sorry for him. And hopefully he'll learn from this.
Okay, Hannah.
Jim, you said the nefarious activity stopped sometime in 2018. Why? Did someone put a stop to it? Do you have any sort of particular understanding of when that stopped and why and if that's true?
You know, I'm not clear on all of those details. Again, I didn't do the investigation, but, you know, it appeared that, you know, baseball was enforcing the real rules stronger. They had people in the dugout. And for whatever reason, you know, it dissipated and was over.
Okay, right here.
Jim, the report from the commissioner pointed out cultural problems within the organization. Do you feel like those problems have been eradicated with the removal of those two gentlemen, or do you feel like that there's more work that you and the organization needs to do to improve the problems that the commissioner pointed out?
Yeah, he mentioned, you know, the culture in the organization. I don't totally 100% agree with that. I think we did have some problems. You know, as I said, you know, the leader of the organization that reported up into was dismissed. I think we have some work to do there, but I can assure you clearly with James' help, and I will be more involved in overseeing it to make sure we have all the controls in place. This will never happen again, and it won't happen again on my watch.
Okay, Joel, and then over here.
Jim, you've referenced the report a couple of times. I believe the report suggests that A.J. Hinch was against this, what was going on, and that to some degree it was happening without Jeff Lunau's knowledge, and yet those two guys got suspended and ultimately fired by you. You empower those guys. You hired those guys. You set the culture for the organization. Should you have been punished as well?
Well, clearly the report states that I didn't know about it. Had I known about it, I certainly would have done something about it. I did hire Jeff, and I think Jeff did a lot of great things for the organization over the years. I don't think I should be held accountable. I'm here to correct it, and I'm here to take this team forward with Dusty and James. And as I said, it won't happen again on my watch.
Okay, ready.
Jim, could you discern from your meeting last night with the players how much sign stealing went on during the 2017 World Series, and do you feel a need to reach out specifically to the Dodgers in any kind of way?
I really don't have all of that information. I don't know that anybody does, and I don't feel it necessary to reach out to the Dodgers.
Okay, David.
Jim, obviously the title stands, but there's been plenty of people around
baseball.
Let's go, Lincoln
Wingo. We're going to go ahead and take over this this press conference for the last few minutes here.
All right. Welcome back here. 848 ESPN 97.5. A lot of stuff to go over, so we will do that on the other side. Let's take a break. You're listening to the ESPN 97.5. I got to talk about Doc Lindblom. I got to talk about hair. I got to talk about the neo-grafting and the process and what Dr. Kane Linville has done for me and what he will do for you. It just feels, I'm so much thicker, so much better. In just a few months, it's going to be all coming in. Doc says, hey, come in. We'll do the PRP. It will stimulate the growth so that it will be even thicker, that it will be even better. I had a giant bald spot in the back, and now it feels like it's going to be dissipated. I'm going to have hair, and it'll be the first time in a while. And I just can't tell you how easy that process was. And if you're somebody that is looking to, you just don't like being bald. That's all. It doesn't have to be vanity or anything. You just don't want to be bald. Well, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com. Start the process. Get the consultation. Let the doc do his work. 975hair.com.
G'day. Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
Football fans, join me, Jack Granato, and Nate Griffin as we call the game for your Houston Roughnecks this Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Tune in to hear them take on the St. Louis Battlehawks, all right here on ESPN 97.5, your home for Houston Roughnecks football.
Kick off engagement season with the perfect engagement ring from Robbins Brothers. Your Robbins Brothers concierge will coach you through every play from hand-selected diamonds, designer settings, and a lifetime diamond warranty for everything you need to score that yes. Visit Robbins Brothers Houston Galleria in Clear Lake today.
If you have kids or pets, sooner or later you'll need new carpet. And right now, the Home Depot has you covered. With an unbeatable selection of carpet that walks the walk, in-store, or even easier, online. Durable and low maintenance, pet-proof, life-proof, and right now, installed for free. It's a good time to be a doer, thanks to free carpet installation at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. $599 minimum purchase of $1 or more per square foot. Valid through May 6, U.S. only.
We've got all the news right here.
Hold up. Stop. I know you're out there about to settle on a donut and drive around all sticky-handed. Raspberry jelly all over your sensible blouse. Well, this is an intervention. A chicken intervention. Because McChicken biscuits and chicken McGriddles are now at McDonald's. Freshly prepared and available nationwide. So just make that turn, hit the drive-thru, save your favorite blouse, and change your life for breakfast at participating McDonald's for a limited time. It's time to wake up breakfast.
It's your month, Texas, because this is Ford Truck Month. Your month for great deals on legendary Ford trucks like F-150, Super Duty, and Ranger. Your month to drive Ford F-Series, America's best-selling trucks 43 years straight. Your month for big-time power, off-road capability, and turning heads around town. Your month to, well, you get the idea.
Based on 1977 through 2019 calendar year total sales.
Great deals, tough trucks. Oh, yeah, it's Ford Truck Month, all right.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right. 852 ESPN 97.5. Let's stream back up. Putting this, we had to take it down because Major League Baseball owns the streaming rights to everything that they do. So we had to take that down. But terrestrially, y'all got to listen to it. And so good stuff. I don't know that apology really. And again, Jim Crane didn't apologize to the other owners. He said, I don't feel the need to apologize to the Dodgers. Nope. Good. Sure don't. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine, but at some point, and this was one of the criticisms of his first apology, was that he never addressed the other owners and never said, I apologize to you guys that this happened and apologize to, other teams that were affected by this. It's just the fans and, we're sorry. We're sorry we did it. And no. And then the issue of the title, no, we ain't taking that away. And every time they want to, they go to, the report said this. The report said this. I didn't do an investigation, but the report said this. So, it's the report. It is what it is. Bregman. Now, you want to talk about a heartfelt apology.
Oh, man. You could tell that I thought he was going to cry at one point. Here, let me reenact it. I am very sorry about everything that happened. Everything that has happened was sad, and we didn't want to do it. And we are very sorry to the city of Houston and Major League Baseball. This is not something that we were happy about, and we are sad about it. So take it easy.
So
we had Travis.
I apologize if you're offended.
Apologize if you're offended.
Bye.
Sorry about all of the problems or whatever.
Yeah.
Y'all take it easy. Yeah. Y'all take it light.
Yeah. And then he gave the four, the number four, as he walked off.
And then he did this. Well, then he turned
he looked
did
at
his
the camera,
eye thing.
At the camera.
Yeah. Then he did hand to the chest.
And four
outside.
Four outside.
And everyone's like, are you sure you're apologetic?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Obviously.
Very apologetic.
Tongue Dart Chris says, anyone else feel like Bregman just wanted to say suck it, but instead had to be a robot? Yes, I totally feel like that.
Yes.
Bregman's, I just want to say we are all very sorry. Hey, we had a meeting.
We are sorry.
And everyone decided we're sorry.
And we cheated. And
we shouldn't have done stuff to get
apologize.
We shouldn't have done what everyone else in the league is doing for competitive advantages. And we're very sorry that we got caught. And we are very sorry
that we got caught.
I was watching ESPN. Doug Glanville said the apology is incomplete. It really didn't feel like, you know, to me.
Here's Jose Altuve. I'm very sorry that we cheated. We had a meeting.
Don't do the Altuve one.
Sorry. That's Vizcaino. That was okay when I did Vizcaino. Sorry. I did apologize.
This is not going away. This is not. It was a.
It was two players.
Dusty was the best, and he didn't even. Listen, the guys were all remorseful. It was heartfelt in there yesterday. Not so much today.
What did you
but
expect?
But yesterday, man, everybody was pretty remorseful.
What did you expect? The only way you're going to get the apology or what people are going to get what they want is if it's a podcast and it's a conversation. Statements aren't going to be what you. That you're not going to get anything from a statement that's going to make anyone happy. If you hear someone telling the entire story, says, look, we came in. We're just a fun, loving group of guys. We did this, that, and the other. And then Brian McCann came in and said we weren't allowed to throw water on his face on home runs. And it got real super serious. And then Beltran kind of took over the locker room. Like, there's a whole story to be told, but they're not doing it on a soundbite presser.
My favorite.
That's not what it's going to be.
My favorite thing was Jim Crane during his initial statement was like, it didn't affect the game. And then during the World Series, and then a reporter goes, hey, Jim, did you think you said the cheating didn't affect the game? I didn't say that.
You kind of did.
Yeah, you did. Yes, you did.
Yeah, you kind of did. Well, yeah, you kind of did. Oh, well. Do you think you should apologize to the Dodgers? Nope.
No.
No. I was glad to hear him say no. And here's the other thing. Do you think you should have been punished because you hired him? He's like, nope.
No.
I didn't know.
Didn't you? No, in the
should
report.
You be punished
no. No, what he said was, in the report, it said, I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's what he
said in a report.
In the report, it said, I didn't know.
Trick ass. That's what I was saying. Like, bitch ass Jeff. Man. Is that you again, Jeff? Bitch ass Jeff Passan? Please let it be him again. Come say it to my face. I'm like, no, it's going terribly for the Astros now. Now Alex Bregman's threatening to fight people. Yeah, this is a disaster.
All right.
So, anyone got any questions? And then Crane's like, no, we're not doing questions, Alex. No. I want somebody.
Yeah.
Got a question?
Ask a question.
Ask a question.
What did Jim Crane do before? What was his other business?
Champion Energy.
Okay. No. He's got a business that ships stuff, a shipping business.
So if his shipping business did something detrimental to the environment, would Jim Crane be responsible for that?
Oh, yeah, if he's the owner of that.
If he didn't know. Not if the report said he didn't know, Del.
Oh, if two of his guys were running coke, would he go to prison? No.
Yeah.
Not if they weren't directly tied to it.
I didn't say coke.
That's like somebody like if Frankie did something and they said, sorry, John, we're also putting you in prison because Frankie did something and you gave birth to her. So
well, prison.
You did
no.
it.
Well, no. It said in the report, I didn't know what Frankie was doing. Okay. It
yeah,
said
exactly.
it in the report.
You don't get punished for that.
What if I did know what Frankie was doing?
Do you think Jim Crane knew? I know
Frankie was dartying
in
high school.
What's that?
Dartying.
What is that?
Day partying.
Oh. Was she really?
The darty. She went to darties, yeah. When the cops came, she had to climb over the
wall.
When
was she
going to
be
escape.
A nun again? I'm trying to get that party.
We got to take a break. Raheel joins us on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5.